This is the Freedom Fiends podcast from High Bay 2A, a mile above sea level and intergalactic Curry Studios. All three locusts are released by Warner Synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty recap. Keep a sin flood of skaters in your level head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Randy? Can you feel it?
Hey, Lou, I do. How are you tonight, man?
I'm doing well, and can you feel it, Brady? No, because Brady's not here.
Yeah, Brady is not here. You mean it said on the schedule that Brady would be here, and now he's not here?
It did. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, what's new and exciting in the world, Randy? How's retirement treating?
Retirement is, well, actually, it's just now started. I was supposed to begin my retirement on 1st of July, but we kind of had a death in the family, and it ended up.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was kind of sad, my mother-in-law. She died, and she had a good long life and died very well, but still, you know, it was sad, and the month of July was sort of somber around here, and I finally, you know, got up this week, I guess what was it, 2 days ago on Monday, and said, wow, you know, all the aftermath of that has passed, and now I feel like I have to do something for my retirement. I was able to kind of put it off because life was rather full for a bit. But now I'm in it, and so far I've kept myself busy. I'll keep trying. I won't skip the gym from now on, and I'll be faithful at that, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah, you're kind of out of excuses for skipping the gym now.
Well, usually I try not to get excuses, except maybe cutting the grass or, you know, working around the house. Usually I go. I try to do that. I'm old enough I can't let that slip. And well, I could lose a few pounds, too. So, all in all, got
to
stick with it.
I think you're past the point of being too busy to do it. Although, my father, when my father retired, he was always too busy. He and I used to get together like every Monday or Tuesday night and go out to dinner. And then when he retired, I never saw him anymore because he no longer had any time. He was always so darn busy.
I'm not that busy yet.
I'm not sure what he was doing, and he couldn't tell you either, but he was pretty darn busy with whatever it was,
you know,
or wasn't.
Whatever you got to do, we'll fill up the available time.
So, anyway, you keep... first story that we're going to cover, this is the one Michael sent us, and it turns out that some people are getting some surprises.
Well, yes. Just before we started, I was listening to the news, mm-hmm. you know, on LRN.FM, and the one news story was that last night, in the dead of night, dark, early morning, whatever, when everyone is asleep, the city of Baltimore took down their Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson statues in the dark of the night. And the mayor
took
was
down
saying,
all the government statues.
No, not all of them, just the Confederate statues. I assume that they're Grant and Lincoln and all of those guys are still fine, and Washington, whoever else. But the best part was that there was one guy out when this happened. Some guy was out walking his dog, and he said he saw them taking it down, and he said when they took it down, it was the fastest thing he ever saw the city of Baltimore do. That was great. And I read another article today that while apparently local jurisdictions are falling all over themselves to take down Confederate statues, the feds are refusing to do it. And for people that want them to take down the Confederate statues at the battlefields, like at Gettysburg, the caretaker or whoever's in charge there said, no, we're not taking them down. This is part of history. I didn't know that was an excuse anymore. This is part of history, and we're not going to rewrite it. And I'm just thinking to myself, that's what they think. They're going to get you one of these days. And who knows? Maybe no statues, except maybe Lincoln and FDR will survive.
Take them all down. Hey, we can't have a statue of FDR.
He's the one that racially selected American citizens and put them in concentration camps.
Yes, he did. He did that in World War II, didn't he?
He is literally like Hitler.
Now, see, now you went and lost the argument. You brought up Hitler.
Now, Godwin's Law says that eventually Hitler will come up or somebody will be compared to Hitler. But it doesn't mean that you lose the argument.
Okay.
That's just your revisionist rulemaking.
Okay. Well, I don't agree with it. I'm just telling you that a lot of people still abide by that. I don't even think it's in the statute books. But it's...
What is? What's not in the
statute
books?
Common knowledge on the... Godwin's Law.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, that was kind of, you know, I like the part about... It would be the fastest thing the city of Baltimore had ever done.
Yeah, based upon some stories that we've covered in the past, you and I, at least for one show, if they could take down their dirty cops and their dirty politicians as quickly as they take down a Confederate statue, that would be great.
Well, you know, last time I was on the Freedom Fiends, we did the story about the Baltimore cops that were planting the evidence. And actually, yeah. that cop planted that evidence faster than that statue came down, I'll bet anything. So maybe the dog walker would have had a different opinion if he'd been there to see that.
But what I'm saying is maybe the government could take down the dirty cops and dirty politicians as quickly as they take down statues.
That'll never happen. Well, hey, you were asking me. I had a diversion there,
tangents
off to one direction. A tangent, exactly, and that's not necessarily bad. But there's another article. I don't know if I get to anything tonight that I was thinking. You know, we might talk about because, in addition to hearing this news story right before we began, Michael sent me I guess both of us. I don't know, an article entitled. White nationalists are flocking to genetic ancestry tests, but many don't like their results. Now that's a title. You got to read this article, right? Because it starts out there as some white supremacist who came on daytime TV, you know, wearing a suit and tie, and they were going to have announced the results of his DNA testing, which on live TV, I guess, revealed that he was 86% European and 14% sub-Saharan African. And you're thinking, right, this is as delicious a story gets. And apparently the audience really enjoyed it. And then it goes on to talk about how this is a popular thing on the websites, I don't know, are they Nazi websites or are white supremacist websites? I think they did a study, some sociologists or something did a study on what's the big Nazi website? Stormfront, is that the one?
Something like that.
I think they were studied the message bases. Apparently this DNA testing has been popular on that site, and I guess in, you know, certain, it's been popular with people all over the place, but it's been popular there because it's kind of important to know that you're white if you're in that group, and so people are posting the results that they get, it's a divider because some people, a lot of people, only maybe 30% of the people that gave their results said that they were just as pure. They were so pure, they were just super happy with their results. And I guess that leaves 70% that were, a little less pure. I'm not sure, you know, I'm thinking...
That would be the browning of the world... Of the world that they're fearing,
I guess. I mean, you know,
maybe this is that white genocide that they keep talking about.
Yeah, and if you're black, I assume that doesn't work. And can they tell if you're Jewish? I'm sure that doesn't work either.
I think they could tell if you're Ashkenazi Jew, because I think that is an actual racial type thing.
Aren't Ashkenazi Jews mostly European in ancestry?
You know what? I really don't know enough about this. All I remember is this girl that I know from Face Beast was talking about how she got her DNA test back, and it turned out that she was some percentage of Ashkenazi Jew. Hmm. So,
yeah. Well, I don't know about that sort of thing, but apparently, they know what parts of the world you're allowed to be from to still be, you know, pure. I don't know what. Do they use the word Aryan? Is that like Hitler did, or not? Said Hitler again.
I'm not really sure. I think they do. Aren't there groups like the Aryan Brotherhood or something like that? I don't know. But anyway, going back to the story.
Yeah, the majority of the people, they did not find that they were of damn pure blood, as one fellow put it. And the community, though, kind of rallied around to help them. A lot of people, they're just rejecting the validity of the test. And, you know, who knows? I don't know if the tests are valid or not. But I'm sure the people that got results they liked said that. Since some rejected the tests entirely, saying that an individual's knowledge about his or her own genealogy is better than whatever a genetic test could reveal. And that's probably true. I mean, we all know who our parents and grandparents were. I personally haven't met all my great-grandparents. I think I met two of them.
That sounds similar to that cap story that we had with the people that were raising hydroponic tomatoes that got raided by the police. The police found the old tea leaves in the garbage and said, "Ah, this is weed. This is as good as an actual test. Let's do a raid and bust them." After finding out the results of the 86-14, the studio audience whooped and laughed and cheered. And Cobb, who was in 2013 charged with terrorizing people while trying to create an all-white enclave in North Dakota, North Dakota already is all white, I think, reacted like a sore loser in the schoolyard. Wait a minute. Hold on. Just wait a minute. He said, trying to put an all-knowing smile. This is called statistical noise.
And other excuses when we get back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
About a warning. You're about to share with my friend Michael W. Dean, a survivor, thinks about humanity and his methods for dealing with it. Brace yourself for some bare naked honesty. If you're willing to hear what Michael is saying, there are times when you'll laugh and times when you want to cry in the retelling of his truths. He has defined it so you can feel it. Take his example and live. I warned you earlier because this book is written in the same way Michael speaks. He's a straight shooter, a no pretense, a no excuses kind of guy that I love like a brother. Understanding how we are to deal with negative people, Michael has answers for you. The human race has its aberrations and monsters, and unfortunately, sometimes they are close to you. Michael gives you his take on them and how he handles the noise. I can guarantee you will pick up a tool to use from a user's manual for the human experience. As Michael says, his life is a teaching hospital.
A user's manual for the human experience. Kindle, paperback, and audiobook. Get it now on Amazon.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and this is Randy England. I'm with Lou Fien, and we were just talking before the break about genetic testing and how it has become popular in the white supremacist movement, that people in the groups get themselves tested, apparently hoping for a result showing their pure background. And it turns out that 30% of the people that have taken the tests and reported them on websites has had backgrounds that were pure enough to satisfy them, and that the majority of the people did not. And so they seem to have turned to different tests, questioning the results of the genetic testing, and who knows how accurate these things are. But talking about something that's called the mirror test, and they'll say things like, if you see a Jew in the mirror looking back at you, that's a problem. but if you don't, you're fine. And I wonder if, you know, we could all use that test, I suppose. But it almost raises a, you know, question that maybe the white supremacists should be, they could solve the whole DNA test problem. And even the problem of looking in the mirror to see if you're the right color, by taking the same tack as, you know, recent years society has taken with gender identity. What do you think, Lou?
I think I just walked in a couple seconds ago and didn't catch most of what you said.
Well, I was just saying...
I want to look in the mirror and see a rich guy.
Well, see, this would solve your problem, too. But if you just say, no matter what I look like or what my test says, you could just say, I identify as a pure white Aryan, and that's it. And you could claim that everybody has to accept that, and you can do anything. You get to go on white supremacist websites as long as you identify as one. And that seems valid,
right?
What
I'm imagining here is these white nationalist guys, when they get their 100% back or whatever, they're going to be dancing for joy and everything else. But the ones who get their 90% and their 86% and their 164th at Michael W. Dean mixed in there, I think that those people are going to be screaming about how horrible the tests are, how inaccurate they are. But they'll agree that the people that got 100%, their test was accurate.
Well, Michael would get 100% of Michael W. Dean genetics, right? Right. Oh, you're right. He's 164th black, isn't he?
Yes,
I've heard him say that.
And here's the thing, though. You've met him before in person, right?
Do you know I have never ever met Michael in person?
Okay, so the year that we were all at Pork Fest together, you were in the secret undisclosed location for continuity of fiends.
Somebody had to. That was me.
Yeah, yeah. Michael is he's how could I put it? You could tell that he has English and or Irish heritage. He's very white. His heritage is English, Irish, and Elmer's glue.
That's Elmer's glue. No, yeah. Norwegian or something like that.
Possibly, but most likely Elmer's glue. No, he's very light complected. He's not quite glow in the dark. He's not like a Irish girl glow in the dark, but pretty close to it.
And, or Danish or Norwegian, or something.
He also has the really light hair.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, if he has black heritage, it's definitely a recessive gene.
Well, yeah,
it's definitely not showing.
It, you know, maybe it helped tone down the glow, you know.
He could be brighter. Who knows? But anyway.
Who knows? All it would mean would be he'd get sunburns worse. He should be glad.
I don't know how bad he is with the sunburns. But anyway, what else do we have on this silliness here?
Well, I don't know if there's that much. I hate to spend too much time dwelling on the white supremacists, although I am kind of with Trump. I can't stand the Marxists or the white supremacists. So, you know.
No, I had heard that Trump...
They're both wrong.
I had heard that Trump made a statement in a press conference, and some very liberty-minded people that have not been Trump supporters have been talking about he told more truths in that one speech or that one statement than he has in his entire presidency.
Yeah, well, then he'll go back on it anytime now.
Probably. We'll be back.
Yep.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Formerly now. Esquire.
Formerly, yes.
Yeah. Are you still the legal counsel for the Fiends?
Well,
Or are you kind of the retired consigliere?
I am retired. You may refer to me as Freedom Fiends legal counsel emeritus.
Okay.
Which means
emeritus.
No, I'm not anymore. Yeah, because I used to be, and I'm old. So that's
it. At least I didn't have to say it this time.
No, you didn't. I'm not afraid of it.
So
revel in it.
I'm sure.
Go ahead, Lou. You were going to say something there.
But getting old is being a prize. Not everybody does it. And I have to tell you, you do it well. And I'm not sure if that's entirely because of your go-getter attitude or your great experience, your long-term experience at being old. I'm not really sure. But anyway, you do it well. So one of our favorite topics here is talking about the police and how they act like their shiny badges and funny costumes grant them special rights. Well, it turns out that the politicians are the ones that grant the cops special rights. And the average person doesn't know this. The average person doesn't know this. But the police officers, the government thugs, the enforcers and imposers of government have their own special Bill of Rights.
Well, you know, you can't, I mean, not everybody's going to beat up on the poor cops all the time. And so we have the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, or Leo Boer for short. The Leo Boer. Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights.
Leo Boer. That sounds like a type of wild straight pig.
Yeah. But the purpose of this thing is to protect our law enforcement officers from investigation and...
What do you mean, our?
The ones that arrest us.
Why don't you just say we?
Don't you have to pay for yours up there? They got a gun to my head every day down here. And I'm paying for it.
Pay for it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, me too. I don't want to pay for it, but I'm forced to.
No, neither do I. If taxes were voluntary, I wouldn't pay a penny. But I pay.
I certainly would never pay for police in law enforcement. I would definitely pay for security and protection. But anyway, let's get back to the Law Enforcement Bill of Rights. Let's not go off tonight.
This whole thing got... Yeah, we're off on tangents all the time. But then this show is always off on a tangent. So, you know, I mean, in 5 minutes from now, we could be talking about that guy's grave and how to get there. I don't even remember his name. But you know that guy.
Robert E. Lee?
No. Some guy up in New Hampshire that's buried there, and there used to be an app. There, that guy, yeah. Now, see, we're on a tangent. See how easy that was? Okay. Back to the all Leo Boer.
All this ADHD without MWD.
Yes. So. But this thing started back in 1967, and there was a Supreme Court case. Things were really different for cops back in 1967 than they are now, and they were tougher on cops, because what they would do is if a cop did something that could be considered a crime, they would still haul him in front of his boss or the chief or whoever, and would sit down and say, okay, you're going to tell me everything that happened. I'm going to get a statement from you, and if I don't get a statement from you, you're fired. And wow, that was so a guy had to choose between being convicted of the crime or just getting fired on the spot. And that's fewer rights than a typical person would have, because you have the right not to incriminate yourself.
Well, hang on for a second. Hang on. At most employers, do you have the right to refuse to answer questions?
Oh, no, they can fire you. We're talking about... This is back when cops were treated like other people.
Right, but here's the thing. If a cop is being interviewed by his supervisor or manager, if you want to use civilian language, then for a cop to refuse to answer questions is no different than somebody that works at UPS, a local hospital, or anything else.
Yeah, but they're a cop.
Right.
You know. So,
well, are they facing legal issues
then? This was the beginning of them getting special treatment.
Okay, but what I'm saying is when they're standing before the chief or the captain or whoever the statocrat is, are they in jeopardy of losing their liberty and going to jail, or are they just in jeopardy of losing their job or being written up or being put on the poop assignment like any other employee at any other company?
Yeah, this is really what the Supreme Court case was, Garrity versus New Jersey.
Well, get to
and
it.
That, okay, this cop was, they forced him to make a statement or be fired, so he made the statement, and then they used the statement against him in the criminal prosecution. And And the Supreme Court said to threaten somebody with firing is coercive enough to make their confession invalid. And the logic of that, I get it. It is coercive. You know, if they said, well, you're not going to get out of here. We're not going to let you go to the bathroom, eat, or sleep until you confess to this. A lot of people would eventually confess. And losing your job could be more serious.
Leave something in the corner.
Yeah, and losing your job could be more serious than missing a meal or your sleep. So, I mean, I get the logic of it. And actually, while I'm complaining about all these extra rights that police get, part of the most of my complaint is probably not that the police would get certain rights, but that the rest of us don't. But never mind. Anyway, that's where this thing came from. And they said, no, you've got to tell people that the interview is voluntary and that there would be no disciplinary action against you if the only thing you do is refuse to answer questions. You know, that could lead to a criminal prosecution. And after that, police departments were required to tell cops that when they sat them down to investigate them on something that could potentially be a crime. And this eventually gave rise to the Leo Boer, the Law Enforcement Bill of Rights, which became far, far, you know, just out there compared to what this Supreme Court case required. And what's ended up happening is that each state has kind of handled this differently, and some only require the protections for police officers that this opinion said they should have, but other states, a lot of states by now, have put in basically the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights with some variations here and there, you know, state to state. But the things that they have in there is that if a department decides to pursue a complaint against a cop, the department must notify the officer and his union. Of course, that's a right that nobody else has but cops. The officer must be informed of who the complainants against him are. You're never going to have that right. You can talk till you're blue in the face, you know, when you're questioned about a crime and say, who's saying this about me or something? Cops must be told who's griping about them. You get nothing. That's, you have no right to that. Cops must be told what the testimony against them is. And this is at the preliminary stage. You know, somebody charged with a crime will eventually find out what they're saying about him and who's saying it. But I'm talking about when they call you in.
Interrogation.
This is during the initial interrogation, exactly,
okay.
That cops have to be told who's griping against them, what testimony it is that's being given against them. Get this, before they're questioned. So they have plenty of time, you know, to get their story straight. This is something that a cop would never do with you if you were hauled in.
So wait a minute, what you're saying is, rather than going in there with all this ammunition and tripping them up in their lies, they have to provide the cops with the information that they're going to be using against them during this interrogation. They have to tell them what they're going to be trying to trip them up with.
They have to play fair. They have to play fair with the cops.
That's not playing fair. That's like spotting somebody 20 points.
Well, yeah, it's more than fair. That's true. But they get that, you don't. Other things, like during the questioning, they can't do any, you know, harass people or make threats or make promises to the cops. Just like, you know, interrogators do to people all the time when they're being questioned about a crime. Well, you can't do that if you're questioning a cop.
Okay, so the Supreme Court has opined that cops cannot be coerced and threatened with different things if they don't answer questions or if they don't answer the way that the interrogators want them to. But how does the Supreme Court feel when this same coercion and browbeating and everything else is done to a regular civilian? Have they opined on that one also?
You don't have the rights on that. There are certain things, like one of the things that cops, you know, get are regular bathroom breaks, meals, you know, not too long, so you don't get sleepy in that. Those things can be pushed so far that even a civilian could have a confession thrown out if it amounted to, practically amount to torture. But with cops, it's like set in stone. You know, you get these at regular intervals like you're a human being, you know, rather than an animal. And so even that is laid out so that they get the benefit of all those things. Other things that they have, there's a certain number of, let's see. You get, in a lot of places, you get 10 days before they can even ask the cop any questions. 10-day cooling off period so that they can't even bring you in till then. And like I said, if you need time to get your story straight and talk to your lawyer and everything, you certainly can. That never happens with civilians. And they've got other rules, like if too much time has passed by, the cop can't be disciplined because of it. And other rules there, like if the person is suspended after that, they have to keep getting all their full salary and their benefits and their attorney paid for. All the stuff that, you know, we regularly gripe about, you know, the jokes about the paid vacation and all that. That stuff's all in writing. And, you know, these are the things that happen. Now, this is the internal investigation, you know, by the police department, not to mix it up with the criminal investigation. But what you say and do there is what, you know, ends up spilling over to see if there'll be a criminal investigation or not. And if they've gamed it so that you couldn't be found guilty because of all these circumstances, then that's one reason why it's a lot harder to fire a bad cop or to prosecute one that... probably guilty.
We'll be back.
Yeah.
The Freedom Fiends Bill of Rights. You got the right to go to the litter box.
Let's think about that.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Of course. Yeah. My lips are sealed.
You'll have them down the road.
Got it.
So anyway, yeah. All animals on the farm are equal, with some animals more equal than others. We're talking about the Law Enforcement Bill of Rights, or Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, or...
The Leo Boer.
Yeah,
Leo Boer. You know, the Leo Boer, one of the problems with the Leo Boer, or the Bill of Rights for cops, is that it's not only stands in the way of getting information for prosecuting them in the way that a normal everyday person would get prosecuted, but also makes it very hard to discipline or remove, you know, a bad cop. Under the Leo Boer, officers, they're judged only by other cops. And so the board that you can't form a civilian review board that would have just everyday person oversight over police actions. You couldn't have a board that was half cops and half, you know, just guys that live in town, deciding what's going to happen. Frequently, you know, when I used to be a lawyer, I mean, even we had, you know, non-lawyer oversight over our you know, matters of discipline and things like that, and picking different things, you know, bringing in civilians so that lawyers weren't running the whole thing. You know, we were only running 99% of it. But, you know, that's a bad thing if it's going to be 100% cops and nobody else can even get close to the process. And I realize that they're going to understand things better civilians, but you know, those things could be explained. But the problem is that just the way the police treat any civilian suspect is just completely different. It's so, you know, if you get arrested for a crime and they think you did a burglary or something, they're dragging you in there tonight and they're going to sweat you tonight. They're going to drag you in there. They're going to read you your Miranda warnings, and then they're going to go after you. And they're allowed to tell you lies. They can tell you almost any lies. There's a few exceptions, but mostly they can lie to you. They can threaten you. But instead of that happening, when a police officer has this situation, well, he gets his 10 days where he doesn't have to say a word. They want him. He says, well, I'll see you in 10 days. And that's it. And so it's so off. And like I said earlier, it's kind of some of these, the rights that the police have, it would be kind of nice if you or I had them
Let me ask you a question here.
Bathroom breaks, what?
Wouldn't the 14th Amendment cover this and say, you know, equal protection under the law?
Equal protection?
All that other nonsense. So why is one group, particularly the government enforcers, getting special rights and privileges and benefits that are not only exempt from others, but not even an option?
I think it's probably, and I'm not an expert on administrative law on that, but I think it would be the administrative distinction between the nature of the two things. The cops thing is an administrative employment sort of issue, and the other thing is a criminal issue. Mm-hmm. And but they're really getting the advantage of the Leo Boer and the Bill of Rights. They're getting the advantage of that spills over into the criminal side of it too. But I seriously doubt that you could bring an equal protection of the laws complaint in there, and I just don't see that happening. And I could be wrong about that because I'm not an expert on that particular thing, and I certainly don't know much about administrative law. And I'm
if it's a copper that's supposed to be being interviewed, isn't this a criminal investigation in many cases? So if they are doing a criminal investigation, shouldn't that person have the same less protection that the average citizen has?
The same less protection. It should be equal, yes. Maybe they should, you know, both have more, but that's a different issue. Just depends. Are we at the end of our hour, Lou?
We are, and the music
is playing. Seems that way.
But we're going to be going on a little break.
Yeah, we'll be back.
Yes, we will.
Worms.
Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibHair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. I'm Randy England, and Lou Fiend is here tonight also. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license, which allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Hi, Lou.
Howdy.
How you doing in this second hour of the show?
Oh, I'm just so excited to be here.
I ran across an article it was an old article. I think it's over 10 years old by Robert Murphy, it was an article at the Mises Institute, and Robert Murphy,
I'm sure a
lot of people know Robert Murphy. He does a podcast, I think, with Tom Woods about every week. They ridicule the Krugman's column every week, which is, you know, kind of fun. You get a chance to be mean to this guy every week, and they pretty much take him apart every time I've ever listened to it. And but anyway, Bob Murphy had an article that's kind of old, but it comes up and people bring it up whenever you talk to statists about libertarianism, or a stateless society, as we would like to see. And the name of the article is "But Wouldn't the Warlords Take Over?"
It's a very important question.
And how do you understand the question as it's posed, Lou?
Wouldn't it look just like it does right now? That's their fear.
You mean the argument is, if you didn't have a government and you had these competing, say, security agencies? Yeah, the problem with that is that they're saying the biggest danger of having a free society with different security agencies or competing agencies is that one of them might get big and form a government.
Right.
Worst case scenario, right?
Or there won't be security agencies, and it will be the strongest are the ones that are in charge, and the weak will just have to bow down to them. So those who have the most guns and are most willing to use violence will be the ones that are in charge. So once again, kind of like it is right now. And the big thing, when you listen to people make these, but what about the fill-in-the-blank arguments, ultimately their greatest fear, the worst possible thing that they can imagine, because they'll tell you what they fear happening, their greatest possible fear is that new governments will pop up, and they will be just like the governments that exist today or have existed in recent history.
Why would they be afraid of that when they like the governments that are here today?
Because they're idiots. Because they're not using logic. They're not making rational arguments. They are essentially doing childish temper tantrum emotional outbursts as they're making their argumentation. Or I shouldn't even say argumentation. Tantrumation is what it is.
But they will also want to point to some country somewhere which has, at the moment, does not have an effective government, and they're in chaos, run by warlords. It used to be Somalia. Wasn't that the one they always talked about?
Yeah. But the interesting thing is, if you look at Somalia, the people of Somalia did not just wake up one morning and go from peace and prosperity and goodness to, holy cow, the government's gone and everything's in shambles. No, it degraded over a long period of time. I'm not sure how long the total degradation was, how quickly it went or how slowly it went, but it degraded over a period of time, and that's when the central government finally collapsed. And the central government didn't just poof disappear. The central government collapsed, and Somalia is not an example of the failure of anarchy by any stretch of imagination. Somalia is a failed socialist state. Let me say that one more time for the people that aren't paying attention and listening properly. Somalia is a failed socialist state.
So, and by state, you mean a government?
Yes, a government. Country with a government, with a central government. And under statelessness, yeah, you had warlords that were going around shooting the place up, which you had before the central government collapsed. Okay, so this was nothing new. These people did not pop up out of nowhere like weeds in a freshly weeded garden the next morning. No, that didn't happen. You had the warlords that were going for quite some time, and they continue to go. But ultimately, under the statelessness, without the central government to try and fix the problems that they had created, the people of prosperity, people of Somalia enjoyed a lot more prosperity than they would have, and they were better off than they would have been with the central government, because just about every indicator that is used as a metric, as a measurement of prosperity in a country, child mortality, murder rates, access to water, medicine, telecommunications, things like that, darn near every metric increased, went up under statelessness than it was at any time in recent history under a state. So the government collapsed, and they actually did better. And they didn't just do better compared to how they were doing, you know, 10 years prior, 5 years prior, whatever. They also did better than the neighboring countries with governments did over the long period of time. So if you do the apples to apples comparison of the two of Somalia and its neighboring countries, Somalia had leaps and bounds over what it would have done on its own, and had leaps and bounds over what the neighbors did.
But the statist who was using Somalia for an example would not be willing to. They would not be comparing Somalia without a state and Somalia before a state, because it was all a shambles. They wouldn't be comparing it with Somalia without a state compared to its neighbors with a state. They want to compare Somalia without a state to the United States with the government we have now. And Murphy, in his article, well, he started out really addressing that issue that you've got apples and oranges being compared.
Well, actually no, because you have a piracy problem in Somalia, and you have a piracy problem here in America. The story that we just covered about the Law Enforcement Bill of Rights covers that.
Yes.
So anyway, continue.
Well, his point was that it doesn't do to compare society A, which is full of ignorant, you know, savages who are accustomed to beating each other over the head and killing each other and taking their stuff. And if that society lives under anarchy, it isn't fair to compare them with society B, which is much more civilized, people that have been raised to keep their hands off other people's stuff and did, you know, the things their mothers taught them, if they had good mothers. And that you can't compare those two societies, because the stateless society of cavemen might actually be a worse place to live than a society with a limited government that is far more modern and advanced. He said you need to compare the same type government. And his thesis was that for any given population, the imposition of a coercive government will always make things worse. And that would seem like a fair conclusion. I don't know if, you know, where Somalia, you need to compare Somalia with and Somalia without, not Somalia to the U.S. And, you know, I think we probably all know that. But the objection, though, it's specifically about the warlords, is that if you had, say, you know, libertarians, you know, talk about in a stateless society, you would still have security agencies. You wouldn't call them police departments, but if you needed somebody to help protect you, you could band together with your neighbors or whatever and hire someone to catch the guy that stole your TV or broke into your house or shot your brother or whatever. And that there could be any number of security agencies, of course. Maybe they'd be associated with insurance companies and or whatever, however it would be set up. But that the complaint is that, well, these security agencies would be fighting with one another. And one of the points, one of the points, you know, that Murphy makes, of course, is a really good one. And that is when you have a central government who steals everything they have, including the weapons with which they wage war. He cited in his article Bill Clinton, when he was president, who was perfectly willing to fire off dozens of cruise missiles when he was president, at the same time the Lewinsky scandal was getting really hot for him. And he did that, and it was a big diversion from the things he was doing. And Murphy says, now, regardless of one's belief about Clinton's motivations, clearly Slick Willie would have been less likely to launch such an attack if he had been the CEO of a private defense agency that could have sold the missiles on the open market for, you know, $1 million apiece. And
Should I also point out that he is quite willing to launch cruise missiles, but he was completely unwilling to go in the military back when he was a young man?
Well, he was unwilling to go in.
Yeah, because he could have gone to Vietnam, right?
Yeah, he could have.
He was in that age category. Didn't he get some deferments?
I don't remember what the situation was. I remember back when he was president, I was sort of up on that, but
because I know there was some discussion about him not about getting out, going to Vietnam or something like that, or at least not going in the military and serving his country and all that other stuff. So I forget what he did. And ultimately, he could have been the average Republican,
Let me rephrase that:
the average Republican mouthpiece, you know, like the Rush Limbaughs and those guys, those that have had the opportunity to go, but they declined. Dick Cheney comes to mind.
So, I think Republicans and Democrats both have about equal propensities for loosing cruise missiles and bombs. Of course, drones now have sort of taken over from cruise missiles many times, but it's all the same thing. You're finding somebody you want to shoot at without them being able to shoot back at you.
But the Republicans are more patriotically correct.
We'll be back. It's a good gig if you can get it.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
Freedom Fiends are back from the market. And Lou, yes. We were talking about if you didn't have a coercive, violent, taxing government, wouldn't the warlords just take over?
Well, obviously, because I'm not going to use my brain to think of anything else. You know, I'm just going to put two and two together because, you know, lack of logic and stuff. Yeah. And yeah, this is really crazy. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about in the last segment. Why do people automatically jump to the conclusion of Somalia? There's two reasons. The first, and it's actually the minor reason in my opinion of this. One, it fits their narrative. Their logic is that without government to protect everybody, things are just going to devolve and everybody's going to lose their mind. That's just a narrative. We need government, otherwise people will get stupid. The other part of it is they really don't think about it. Because like I mentioned with Somalia, they don't think, well, how did Somalia become Somalia? How did things happen? You know, the example I gave was they think that people woke up one morning, the central government was gone, packed up and left in the middle of the night like a rock star leaving a destroyed hotel room, Michael W. Dean, and poof, gone. No, I mean, this happened over a period of time, and it devolved. So they don't think of how things got to that. Or, you know, the narrative that we learn in government schools is German, you know, Hitler came on the scene and says, Jews are bad, and everybody said, okay, we're Nazis now. No, there's a lot of stuff that could bring Hitler to power. But anyway, so if you apply some critical thinking to this stuff, one of the things on here that he talks about is says, for the warlord objection to work, the status would need to argue that a given community would remain lawful under a government, you know, like Chicago. You wouldn't have any murders or anything like that. There'd be complete peace and everybody, you know, no drug dealing or illicit alcohol or any of that stuff like that, because it would be lawful under a government. But that same community would break down into continuous warfare if all legal and military services were privatized. The popular case of Somalia, blah, blah, blah. So one of the things that you mentioned was the cost of going to war. People like to use, Standard Oil and United Fruit having the U.S. Marines go in on their behalf to these Central and South American countries and toppling governments and all this other stuff.
Well, of course
and
they do.
Yeah, they say, well, that's...
Get somebody else to pay for your dirty work.
That's the evils of capitalism. Okay, well, if it was truly capitalism and truly private, would they use the socialized military to go in there? No, they wouldn't. They would use their own resources. They would use their own capital investment to hire a military or a spy agency or a whatever you want, you know, DIY dictatorship club or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, they would have paid out of their own pocket to topple these governments and to install their puppet dictators. They wouldn't have had the U.S. government do it and socialize the cost to the taxpayer. So why do they socialize the cost to the taxpayer? Because it's so bleeping expensive to hire a military to go in and topple governments and install dictators. There's no way that the private sector could afford it. So in some regards, there are some things that only governments can do, and they're almost always the most horrible things.
Yeah, and it's just the old saw of privatize your gains and socialize your losses. Yeah. And make somebody else pay. You know, the whole idea of when you want to attack somebody, you know, whether it's another country or maybe if you're just Missouri wanting to attack those Jayhawkers over in Kansas, if you wanted to get up a good war and didn't have a government to do it for you, you have to pay for it yourself. And I don't know what you would do. Put up a GoFundMe or go kill me. Go kill me on the internet. And if, you know... If we really hated Kansas enough, maybe enough people would pitch in to get up a you know, a neo Quantrill band, and we could head over there. But most of the time, without the government to gin up a war, I'm sure that there would be less warring and fighting. People, when you have security agencies, if your security agency that's taking care of you said, well, you know, give me $1 million and I'll go, you know, fight these guys, or, you know, for $100 we can work this out.
We'll be back. We'll be back. Meow.
See you, Lou. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Be warlordy and stuff like that. So, Randy, what else do we have to talk about? Was there something else that that jumped out at you about the article?
Well,
the different arguments.
What about the deadbeats? The deadbeats that don't want to pay for the private security.
You mean the free rider fallacy?
The free riders.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a fallacy until you debunk it.
Okay. So. The free rider problem, as we are told, is that there are people that will benefit from an activity or an action, and because they will benefit from it, they should pay their fair share. And an example that I was given by a Republican congressional candidate, who, by the way, won, was that if you have 6 or 7 different businesses in the downtown area, and 5 of them want to have a special weekend sidewalk sale and stuff like that, so they're going to pool their resources and they're going to get signs and do advertising and all this other stuff. If the other 2 businesses don't kick in with the other 5, then the other 2 should not be allowed to be open, or they should be forced to pay their fair share of the advertising expenses and things to put on this promotional event. Now, because of course they're going to benefit from this, and if they don't pay their fair share, well, then they're free riders. Well, the thing that you have to look at is the 5 that want to put on this event, are they putting on the event strictly because they want all 7 to be a part of it, or are they putting on the event because they want to have it? Because quite frankly, if one of these businesses is having a sale, like let's say one of the free riders is having a sale, and one thing that we know about businesses is they draw customers in, and customers don't normally just go to that one particular business. They go into an area and they may hit several businesses in the area. So a big example of this is you actually have a lot of stores popping up around Walmarts and Sam's Clubs. And I know that goes contradictory to the nonsense about Walmart destroys small business, but in reality, because customers go to Walmart, these stores will put up around, they'll put up their stores around Walmart.
And benefit from Walmart being there.
Yeah, and
they're free riders.
They're free riding on the existence of Walmart. Interestingly enough, are you familiar with Gordon Foods? Do you have those in Missouri?
We don't. I'm willing to be schooled.
Okay, it's a restaurant supply. They'll do bulk food. People will go there for their home stuff, but it's usually a lot of restaurants and institutional, and then a lot of getting stuff for parties. So they'll do like bulk, large quantity type things. You don't go in there and buy a pound of hamburger patties. You go buy a box or a case of hamburger patties with several pounds of burgers in there. But anyway, it's kind of a larger bulk supply for food service stuff. But anyway, in the area where I used to live, Gordon Foods had opened up a store right next to the Walmart and Sam's Club. Now, why on earth, if Walmart destroys these types of businesses, why on earth would they open up next to a Sam's Club, which, what does Sam's Club do? It does bulk sales of things. So why would they open up if they're going to get destroyed? Well, the truth is they're not getting destroyed. The people that are going to Walmart and Sam's Club, maybe they don't want to pay for the Sam's Club membership, but they'll go into Gordon Foods where they can get the large quantity, bulk size packaging of stuff without having to buy the membership. Or maybe they don't want to wait in line at Sam's Club. Or maybe they, for whatever reason, they choose to go in there. But interestingly enough, that Gordon Foods had moved from like a, I don't know, mile or two down the same road to be next to the Sam's Club. So they were actually free riding on that. So here's a question. If going back to the original example that I gave with the seven businesses in the downtown area, if the five people or the five businesses want to have a special promotional event on the weekend, are they doing it dependent upon everybody participating, or are they doing it because they want to have the event? Now, another comparison would be somebody who does improvements on their home, which increases their home value, but also it increases the value of the neighboring houses. So should everybody be forced to put in special flowers and all this other stuff? Yet another example, you have a beekeeper who obviously keeps bees because he's a beekeeper, and the neighbors have plants and flowers and stuff like that, and the bees go over to the neighbor's house and pollinate.
Now, and they get the benefit. Whole thing,
yeah,
but none of those things are enough to motivate the person who's spending the money, who's not free riding. None of those are enough to motivate them not to do the thing they're doing. And the point is, you can tolerate a lot of free riding before you decide you don't want to do it anymore, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and also the thing is, you haven't lost anything by that. If you're a beekeeper and your bees go next door and pollinate the neighbor's flowers, what have you actually lost?
But you could make a lot more if the neighbor had to pay you for his pollination.
I guess so.
If you could get the government to force them to pay you.
Yeah, but he could also charge you rent because your bees are trespassing on his property.
You know,
you could really have a lot of stupid arguments there.
Better yet, though, on an issue of police protection or security or whatever you'd want to call it, I don't know that there would be any free riders at all, simply because, you know, like one way that you could set up a security system would be to have insurance so that if you had a crime, you know, somebody broke into your house or something, their insurance company would send an investigator out, just like the local police send a detective out. They'd take a report and try to catch the guy that did this. And if you had insurance, they'd probably just write you a check on the spot for your TV that got stolen and for your busted door and say, here's the money. You sign this assignment. If we catch the guy, we'll get the money from him.
Yeah. And here's the thing to remember, though. Most of these crimes are never solved. Most of these property crimes. So quite frankly, it might be more cost effective for the insurance company to just write the check rather than do an investigation.
It might be.
Now here's the thing, though. With the police, they do the same thing, but you have to pay for the investigation whether they do it or not through taxation. So the insurance company has the incentive to economize their scarce resources or be smart about it. Choose your battles. You know, pick where you want to.
They would choose their battles. Yeah. But the thing that they could do, though, is that although they, if they show up and give the good service to their own customers and write them a check for their loss right on the spot, then they can catch the thief or not, depending on whether they can. And if they can, and they can get him and drag him in and make him pay the restitution plus all their expenses, they would do that if it was a reasonable thing to do. But on the same token, though, if you were the poor guy on the street who wouldn't pay, you could still call up the insurance company, say, send out the investigator. First thing he'd do when he got to the door is he'd say, okay, we're willing to investigate your crime, but we're going to take, you know, a percentage of your recovery for our expenses. And once again, if they can catch the guy, in other words, make the criminal pay for for as much as possible. And people that aren't subscribers, they wouldn't get the check written out to them, but they'd at least get some of their money back if they could catch the guy, which is more than they ever get now.
Well, here's something else. Because insurance is a transfer of risk and the underwriting process is an assessment of risk, and the insurance companies are always trying to mitigate and reduce risk, the insurance company is going to do certain things to help you not be robbed in the first place. And if you have homeowners insurance, you know that they're going to ask about fire alarms. They're going to ask how far away the nearest fire department is. They're going to ask what sort of security features you have for the house. Do you have an alarm system? Who monitors it? All these different things. And what they're going to do is they're going to look to reduce the likelihood that their customers are going to be robbed. And this is one of the services that you can get out of Detroit's Threat Management Center, is they will teach people how to protect themselves to avoid needing to wait 7 hours for a cop to come shrug his shoulders and write a report. So they're going to say, here's what you can do to improve your security. Check out these locks here. Reinforce your door jams here with this stuff here. Here's the alarm that you want to have. This makes a nice little noise that will hopefully scare people away. Here's the monitoring service, things like that. Because quite frankly, cops don't prevent robberies. We've discussed this in the past with the Kansas City Preventive Patrol experiment and similar type experiments. They do not prevent robberies. You know what stops robberies? Locks and Glocks.
So having the security company patrol up and down your street isn't really benefiting the customers of the company any more than it's benefiting the non-customers. It's not doing any of them any good, according to those studies, right?
Well, what you're talking about is police and you're comparing police to security and protection, which is the apples and oranges or the Somalia to modern day America argument. I don't think that private security would really prevent a whole lot of crime. But what you have is with private security, you would assume that these people, because they're in the security and protection business, that when they're looking for people that don't belong in the neighborhood or that are actually breaking into a house, they're looking for these things. They're not looking to write tickets to generate revenue over ordinance and code violations. So they're actually looking for people that are breaking in. They're looking for people that are stalking the woman that's walking by herself. So they're actually looking to stop crime as it happens. So they have a better chance. But once again, you can't be everywhere. I think that they would most likely be able to respond quicker, since they're not going to be out doing busybody revenue generation and shakedown extortion racket stuff. So it would be a little bit better, but ultimately, as far as your home goes, you are your own first responder. You always are, period, because it doesn't matter if it's public or private. The response time is still going to be longer than the actual thing happens.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. RATS is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. RATS was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. RATS is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download RATS free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
That's bothering me. So, Freedom Fiends,
we're back.
Yeah, we are back. So, what's going on, Randy? What do we want to talk about?
Well, you know, we've been talking now for 2 hours. We were talking about the law enforcement officer's Bill of Rights, which is a crock. And then, you know, we were talking about the stateless society and how could it possibly work? You know, all these problems that we have with the state, and now, you know, saying, well, wouldn't we have these problems without it? And, you know, the question the question that it always comes back into my mind when I'm trying to think, well, what would we do without the state, you know, for this or that or everything? And, you know, the bottom line that I always seem to come back to, because there's a lot of brilliant people that have come up with solutions for problems. I don't know how it would all work out in the end if you had a totally private society. But the thing we mentioned earlier about the warlords was that, look, what's worst case scenario? And that is, well, the security companies, the warlords would start acting like a government and we'd be back where we are. And when I hear that, I'm thinking, well, then maybe we ought to give it a try, because if it might work, if worst case scenario is we're back where we are now, where I've got a gun to my head stealing my stuff and telling me everything that I can do, it seems like it's worth the ticket. But when you ask the question, what would we do without the state, you know, you have to look at the other things that the state do. And so the question of, if we got rid of the state, what would we replace it with? I think we worry too much about that. You know, like the drug war that the state has spent so much time and money on. You know, ask yourself, if the state wasn't doing this stuff with the drug war, would the world be better off, you know, or worse? And I'm thinking they'd probably be better off. But if you look at the biggest, worst, horrible thing that the government does, and that is just they murder people, right?
War.
The kill so much. Not even war. Leave war out, and just simple murder. And you know the who was the guy that wrote the book, Murder by the State, it was a study governments.
The University of Hawaii.
Yes.
Rommel. I want to say Rommel, but R.J. Rommel.
Something like that. Something, and this like fellow, he's recently died, I think. But in his book was, you know, set out the number of people that in his study had been killed by governments. And this is governments murdering their own citizens. And when you look at what the numbers, I think his first numbers in the book were like 169 million people in the 20th century. And by the time he died, it had been revised to way over 200 million people. And you stop and think about
it. Actually, it was, I think the last I heard was 263 million. So over a quarter of a billion murders outside of war.
Outside of war. You know, and then you stop and think about, well, what about private murderers? You know, like Jeffrey Dahmer, he killed 17 people. Who was the clown guy? John Wayne Gacy. And he killed, you know, a couple dozen, I guess. Ted Bundy, you know, killed a whole bunch. And then you got all these killers that go in and shoot up the theater or the school. Those guys are amateurs. I mean, they're killing in the low double digits. They're nothing compared to government. They're not even a footnote compared to millions. And so to ask yourself, you know, on a private level, murderers just can't even, there's just so many orders of magnitude smaller than government. Oh, the book was Death by Government, R.J. Rummel. And you just, when you get down to the bottom line of, you know, what would we replace the government with? You know, my answer is, does it matter at all? Who cares? Because we're going to be better off in a free society. We can work this out, and for a risk that we could end up back where we are, killing 260 million people every 100 years. I'd like to take a shot at it. I really, really would.
You know what? Under anarchy, if there were only 100 million murders, that would be a vast improvement of monumental proportions.
That would only be a million a year.
Yeah. So, thanks for coming on tonight, Randy. It's always a pleasure. I hope to talk to you more often now that you're retired.
Thank you, Luke.
Yes. And thank you, everybody, for listening tonight. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Well, good night. Worms.